The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, a veteran college coach gets a lousy review on the Shakespearean stage, why one team gets assigned a donut for their home court advantage, and in Money Time today, can we exercise some of our own demons?
Dave, busy weekend, obviously. College basketball in full swing, college football, the final weekend of the quote-unquote regular season, and of course, a busy NFL Sunday as well. What was your first take that you want to share with our viewers today?
First take is one that we'll share quickly now, but more in-depth as the week goes on, because we haven't figured it all out as to the whys yet. If you saw the end of the Dallas-Arizona game yesterday in regulation, it was something that was just absolutely dumbfounding. Dallas, needing to get into a better field goal position with a young kicker, just decides to let time tick off the clock while hoarding two timeouts. We were going to work it into a postmortem today. We've got some other topics that will take precedent for today, but we're still confused as to why. So sometimes, for as hard as we work, as hard as the players work, as hard as the coaches work, we go to the end of the day just scratching our heads. But that will be a postmortem this week. There's got to be something there to that. Teddy, it was a big weekend. What do you bring with you?
Well, it's certainly not more than a Jason Garrett oops in that regard. We need to talk about the whole NFC wild card picture, because really there have been four teams in contention looking for two spots in the NFC. We have the Giants, the Falcons, the Lions, and the Bears. And maybe, you know, if the Giants get hot down the stretch, maybe the Cowboys would be in that group. They'll probably have to sweep Dallas in order to do that. But this is December. This is the time of year where good teams step up and win. And not one, not two, but every single one of the NFC wild card contenders whiff. Nothing. Crash and burn yesterday. Failed to get straight up. The Giants were the only one to cover against the spread when they came in. I guess we'll call it a backdoor against Green Bay, the Packers, with an 8-point lead and less than 2 minutes remaining. But it's December. Good teams step up. The NFC right now, they have the three best teams in the NFL according to my power ratings. When we talk about Green Bay, we talk about New Orleans, and obviously the overlooked factor with San Francisco, a team that's not getting any hype. But boy, when you look at the depth of that NFC race right now, none of the contenders have made any signs, shown any signs of stepping up. And it brings home a point that we have to hammer home every December. Just because teams are in must-win situations don't mean that they will win. All these teams are going to be in must-wins down the stretch. They're going to be priced accordingly. There may be more money to be made fading them than supporting them in these various roles. And that's going to bring us to Market Watch, Dave. And obviously, the busiest part of the weekend, for me at least, was last night when all the bowl projections came out. I know you were doing what I was doing at that time, which means rummaging through the local papers one at a time, looking for little tidbits, looking for who's excited about their matchup, looking for who's bummed out about their matchup, and lots to talk when it comes to bowls. Even though we only have lines right now for the BCS bowl games, the remaining lines for the rest of the bowls, maybe this afternoon, maybe tomorrow, I've heard conflicting reports. Bottom line is lots of matchups, not many numbers just yet.
And we're not in a real hurry to be standing in line waiting for those numbers. It was a huge disappointment last night. Is what we're looking for in these matchups is usually before they appear, we have teams that we want to play on. We have teams that we want to play against. And similar to the NCAA tournament draw, you're just hoping they align the right way. For my own pocket, it was a very, very disappointing Sunday evening that so many of the teams we wanted to play on the most, teams that we think will play hard in a bowl, coaches we think will prepare hard for a bowl game, teams that maybe are under the radar in terms of the public, a lot of them are playing each other. At the very top, of course, no surprises. And you will hear a lot of people make cases for Oklahoma State getting into the BCS championship game. A lot of the convoluted reasoning. Well, you didn't win your conference. You don't belong here. You don't deserve a second chance. Here's the thing. Anytime anyone brings that up, say, do you believe Oklahoma State was better than LSU? Or better than Alabama? Because I haven't come across that person yet. I see people make the logical cases. Here's why Oklahoma State should be there instead of Alabama. I've yet to hear anyone say, oh, they're better than Alabama. One thing we did see last night, though, we saw the LSU-Alabama line go up. A couple of books tried to put up in that 2-2.5 range. Got taken back pretty quickly. Right now, looking at LSU 1 in most places, looks like a place where that number may sit for a while.
Yeah, I would think so. And the total in that game also set with a 40 for LSU-Alabama. Of course, the first inning between these two teams featured a grand total of 5 field goals. That was an overtime game. 9-6 final score. We all remember that. The second time around, at least the initial marketplace reaction is, hey, we should see a little bit more scoring than that, maybe. You know, they had extra time to repair the first time as well. This time, a little bit more time to repair and perhaps better knowledge of what the opposing coach is likely to do. But, you know, there are so many bad matchups. And again, you're going to hear people whining, complaining, why is Michigan playing Virginia Tech in a BCS bowl game? Understand, it's not about whining. It's not about getting attractive matchups. Every decision in the entire bowl process is based on money, 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 money. Okay, why did Michigan get it over Michigan State? Michigan's going to sell more tickets. Michigan's going to bring a little bit of a higher TV rating. Why did Virginia Tech get it? Well, the game's in New Orleans. They expect a lot of Virginia Tech folks to show up put money into the local economy, et cetera, et cetera. It's all about money. So we can whine and bitch and moan about what should have been. Doesn't matter. Hey, we've got 35 games during bowl season to handicap. Let's start handicapping them. And we got some ugly ones to start, Dave. Why don't you tell some of the ugliest matchups, the one that you're least likely to enjoy?
There's one that we had talked about before we went on the air, wondering if you might see the lowest television ratings ever for the Beef O'Brady Bowl between Marshall and Florida International. Two almost impossible sells for television. But what you're going to see there, and in a lot of these games, well, Teddy alluded to the money factor. Keep in mind that most of these are designed by ESPN to go out there and get television ratings, because even a lousy game or a lousy matchup for ESPN gets better ratings than their alternative programming would have been. And, of course, for the bookmakers, they love it because Marshall Florida International will write business as a standalone. But what you're going to see, and it's why these matchups are dollar-based, it's the people in the stands. You're going to see a lot of empty stadiums. That's why it's the local bowl that has to do whatever they can to try to get a little bit of a draw. Think about this very first one. Albuquerque, New Mexico, has Wyoming playing Temple. How are they going to fill one-third of that stadium? And that would be maybe our projected over-under. Maybe about one-third of the stadium gets filled. Yeah, Wyoming people are excited to be in a bowl. That's still a pretty good haul. It's a beautiful drive down 25 along the front range of the Rockies, but that's a long haul. Temple fans flying out to Albuquerque, it's just not going to happen. So that's where that financial aspect comes in, and that's why teams like Western Kentucky, you go out there, you get your 7 wins, you qualify, you're at home while a 6-7 UCLA team is still in the game. Why is that? There'll be some UCLA fans who will go to San Francisco to watch a bowl game. There was a fear that Western Kentucky would not have traveled well. That's that fear of the unknown. My thinking, though, is Western Kentucky would have considered a bowl as a major reward. They might have traveled better than most of these teams in the lesser bowls.
And you brought up UCLA, and that Marshall-Florida International, which is certainly not a marquee matchup. What about this one, the Illinois-UCLA matchup, which features two teams with a combined 13 losses? This is a bowl game with two teams that have combined to lose 13 games. The one team has given up, 90-something points in their last two ball games, UCLA. The other team comes in on a 6-game skid. Both teams have already fired their coaches. Oh, and the reward? You get to play on national TV. Knock them dead, kid. But, you wanted to chime in there, Dave?
No, so here's the difficulty I had with UCLA even appealing in the first place for this, because they had to petition to the NCAA because they didn't qualify. The NCAA, of course, passed it because they weren't going to say no. But if you're UCLA, you're really doing a disservice to your assistant coaches. Because right now, if they know they're not going to be kept on next year, this is the prime time for them to be interviewing for other jobs while other jobs are available. If I'm a UCLA assistant, I'm actually a little bit angry at having to be tied to this university with all the other openings around the country, getting filled as we speak. In fact, what we'll do, let's say tomorrow in Money Time, we'll start focusing on the coaching aspects to these bowls. But if I'm a UCLA assistant, it's like, wait a minute. I don't want to have to do this anymore. I want to go apply to work with Bob Davie in New Mexico or Hugh Freeze at Mississippi or some of these other jobs that are getting laid out there. And what about the poor UCLA players? You know, for the season you've had and off of those ugly losses to Southern Cal and Oregon, do you want to go play Illinois or would you just as soon say that's enough?
I would personally assume that that's enough. But there are so many matchups here. Let's talk about there's going to be a lot of disappointing teams. And one of the things that you need to do with your homework for bowl games is try to gauge which teams are excited about where they're going to go and which teams are a little bit bummed out. And the two Mountain West teams got screwed the most. I don't think there's any question. Seeing TCU and Boise State, they're both playing before Christmas. They're both playing in minor games. Boise travels back here to Vegas. They were in Vegas a couple weeks ago, annihilating UNLV. In the second half, TCU playing against Louisiana Tech, who was such a bet-on team for me come bowl season. Maybe a little bit outclassed here, a La Tech, but have to see if the Horned Frogs look excited. But that's two teams that absolutely got hosed by the bowl process. Again, it's not our job to make judgments. It's our job to make money. So, yeah, they got hosed. Are these two teams we could potentially take advantage of, Dave?
We might, because you're going to see a high price tag, you know, for a team like Boise. Of course, will Arizona State bring anything at all? We don't know who the coach is even going to be for that one yet. But talk about the disappointments a little bit, too. And I think we're probably going to share in this. I think both of us were probably looking to Vanderbilt more than any other bowl team, a team that was going to play hard, was going to be very excited, was likely going to get a bowl in their home state. We thought they'd either be in Nashville or in Memphis. They're going to be in Memphis. But who did they match them up with? A Cincinnati team that will also be excited, that will play hard, and arguably will bring more fans to Memphis than Vandy will. I think that was my single biggest disappointment.
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to fade A&M. You know, oh, they're matched up against Northwestern. Northwestern proved to be not very good. A lot of high-scoring matchups in my mind. One that stands out in particular, how about this Baylor-Washington game? That's a game where the loser can be in the 40s. And in general, we talk about bowl strategies, bowl philosophies. The prevailing wisdom, shall we say, certainly for the early bowl games, is take dogs on the money line, and take overs. We've seen that to be, in general, a profitable strategy early on in bowl season, and that Baylor-Washington game stands out to me as a game that, you know, that there's going to be fireworks in that one.
So here's what we're going to do. Every single bowl game will be broken down into Money Time segment between now and January the 9th. So we're going to be at this for about a month. We'll break every game down for you. We'll start, we've got games, three games a week from Saturday. They'll be in Money Time next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But we will give you every game on Vegas Sports Day. Even though we didn't get the matchups that we necessarily wanted, we're going to find a lot to work with.
We got some great emails coming in this morning. Sorry, didn't have time to answer them on air today. We will get to them tomorrow. Keep those emails coming in. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter. Send us questions. Send up questions on Twitter. At Vegas Sports Day, of course, for Twitter. And get involved in the community. Again, great questions in the posting forum today. It's real simple. Go to covers.com, click on community, click on forums. Active threads and discussions going right now. We're going to answer all those emails tomorrow, but right now, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, you can always count on Frank Solich to run the football on third and short, right?
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. It's time for the postmortem, where we're going to take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
There may not be a bigger matchup all season than that North Carolina-Kentucky game this past Saturday, unless they have a rematch, or either one ends up facing an Ohio State team that sure looks like a juggernaut early on. Kentucky wins 73-72. The game goes right to the final possession. So it was that close. The game was in Rupp Arena, so we walk away thinking North Carolina may have been the better of these two teams. Anytime the losing team in any game scores in the 70s, there's an assumption that the offensive flow was pretty good. But when we put this game under the scalpel, well, there might be a little more to it than just that.
We talked about the Kentucky defense a little bit on this show already, particularly when St. John's came to Rupp Arena last Thursday. And you know, the photo that we put up now wasn't Kentucky, North Carolina. It was Kentucky, Kansas. Because we like that photo. It shows the way that team's been playing defense around the basket. And that's a big part of what you might have missed on Saturday. Yeah, the final score makes it look like it was a little bit free-flowing. It wasn't. First, put that score in perspective in terms of the outright winner. North Carolina, 11 out of 18 from three-point range. Kentucky, 4 out of 17. Carolina's a plus 21 from outside, still loses the game. That's significant. Where was the dominance? It was inside for Kentucky. Kentucky held North Carolina to 14 out of 42 on two-point shot attempts. That's absolutely phenomenal. 7 of those were block shots. That was 2 days after they had 14 block shots against St. John's. That's why we're saying watch this team closely. There is outstanding young talent. Arguably 4 guys that are going to be lottery picks, maybe 6 guys that will be first-round draft picks. So our first thought is, okay, they got talent. They'll run, they'll shoot, they'll dunk, but will they defend? Because young guys with talent don't always do that, and they don't always do it as a team. That's what makes this Kentucky team look so special to us. For the full season, 32.6% shooting against them. And that's against a pretty good schedule. You're talking about teams like Kansas, teams like North Carolina, St. John's, Old Dominion, quality programs. 87 block shots already, 66 steals, and they're doing it team-wide. 4 different players have double-figure steals, 7 different players at least 4 block shots already. That Kentucky defensive chemistry might be as good as we've seen for a team this early in the year, gosh, in at least a decade. Something real special going on there. Let's go to Tyler Zeller, North Carolina center, for his take. And this explains just how dynamic they've been. He says, they did a great job of getting there almost before I got the ball. So it was tough. Normally, you have half a second to see it coming. They're playing with a lot of heart and a lot of talent. They're going to be a special team to watch. Now we transition to the Shakespearean stage, as we do so often, when we see these little moments on a football field turn into something so major that encompasses so much going forward. Yeah, the old notion that you can never score more than 6 points on a single play. No, sometimes we see that a play can be worth much more than that. So in the regular season, we tell you to chart these games and adjust your ratings accordingly for how they could impact the following week. But now it's championship time. We're thinking, you know what, you might not have adjusted properly because many times you close the book at this time of the year. But no, these are plays that impact teams going forward into the seasons ahead. And when a championship is involved, sometimes a single play brings such stuff as dreams are made on, to go back to the Tempest. So when we go back to this past weekend, yeah, once again, a couple of major swings in play, and the play is the thing.
I love the Tempest references. It's Shakespeare time, and we're going to start with LSU, because LSU looked like anything but the number one team in the nation in the first half against Georgia. They had no first downs. They had a grand total of 12 total yards of offense. They could have been down much more than the 10-0 score that they trailed by late in the second if Georgia had not dropped a pair of potential touchdown passes. And as each possession went by and that Georgia defense was gaining confidence and getting more aggressive, and it really looked like an upset was in the making in Atlanta. Enter the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu. Mathieu with a 92-yard punt return against Arkansas that we detailed on this show last week, turned that game flow around completely, and guess what? This time, a 62-yard punt return touchdown that changed momentum in a major, major way in that ballgame. Instead of being down double figures and having to rely on an awful passing game, LSU's passing game in that contest, 30 yards on 13 attempts. They could stay patient, trailing only 3 instead of trailing by 10, and the game turned. Mathieu has now scored 4 touchdowns this season while leading the team in tackles. He has 6 forced fumbles, 2 INT. The punt return in the first half was probably the biggest play of all, although the punt return in the second half, the real momentum changer, well, that was when Georgia decided they were going to quit. The Bulldogs, a little bit of a glass chin in that ballgame, but it was Matthew's brilliance. And he's not going to get invited for the Heisman Trophy. It was his brilliance that was the difference in that ballgame for LSU.
Frank Solich became King Lear Friday night. He had the Mid-American Conference Championship right in his hands, right where he wants it and for his style of football. They're up 20-7, 9 minutes left, 3rd down and 2 around their own 20-yard line. What does the Frank Solich team do in that situation? They run the ball. His Nebraska teams won by running the ball. His Ohio teams, a little more balanced than Nebraska, they still run the ball awfully well. But if you're up 13, 9 minutes, ticking clock, you run the ball because first, you can convert a 3rd and 2 anyway. But even if you don't, get another 35, 40 seconds off of there, shorten it down near that 8-minute mark, and dare Northern Illinois to get 2 touchdowns in those 8 minutes. If you don't run, you punt the ball away, you turn the field over. So what do? They call a pass play. Tyler Tettleton throws an interception. Northern Illinois gets the ball at the Ohio 37. And from that moment on, it's a 16-0 run the other way, and it's Northern Illinois that wins the MAC championship. Ohio so shaken by that turn of events, they made 1 first down the rest of the game, and that came on a penalty. They never got their composure back after that play, probably one that never should have happened. We can understand a 3rd and 8 interception. Maybe you gamble there, knowing that if you get a first down, you're going to have control of the game. But on 3rd and 2, you didn't have to put the ball in the air in the first place. So Frank Solich, in his attempt to play on the Shakespearean stage, just doesn't get a very good review from us.
When we come back, we're going to heat up the hot stove on our Insider Six Pack.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let's pop that top on today's Insider Six Pack. Yes, the hot stove. You guys know what the hot stove is. It's the off-season baseball moves. Come on. Everyone knows that, right? Or is that a dated reference? Send me an email. Let me know. Send us a tweet. Let us know. Whatever you want to do. Bottom line, let's talk about what the Florida Marlins are doing, this year's biggest spenders in the early part of free agency. I know it's football. It's basketball. Kind of update you on this one because I'm sure there are future books out there that are maybe asleep on the wheel on this Marlins team. They're not just talking the talk as they move into the new stadium they think will revitalize their franchise. They're walking the walk. Who've they signed? Well, let's see. Closer Heath Bell. Closer was one of Florida's biggest weaknesses last year. They bring in the shortstop Jose Reyes. Now they can move Hanley Ramirez over to third. And boy, that's a pretty dynamic left side of the infield. And there's going to be more on the way. Contract offers have been made to Mark Burley from Chicago, C.J. Wilson from Texas. There have been reported trade talks involving the likes of Matt Garza and Gio Gonzalez. This team might have some pitching. Bell supplies a closer that was missing last year. Waiting in the wings, let's not forget about this one, still lurking in the background, Albert Pujols has had negotiations with the Marlins right before Thanksgiving. And having shown the commitment to winning by signing Bell and Reyes, maybe Florida can add one more pretty big bat into their stable. Some food for thought. Again, if you see a sports book out there that's a little bit slow to adjust their future lines.
Time to go courting advantages, again, on the college hardwoods. We always tell you you need to have these charts in your pocket, you know, the point spread equivalents for money lines, the percentages the games fall on different numbers. College basketball, you also need a little geographical chart. Knowing where some of these schools are can shed light into their matchups. Tonight, Brown plays at Providence, according to the schedule, but it's not really at Providence. Brown is located in Providence. It's this short little bus ride to get over to the arena. They play this game in the Dunkin' Donuts Arena. That is the Providence home court, but since Providence rarely fills up more than half of the place, sits 12,600, They rarely fill half of that. There are plenty of tickets available for the Brown people if they want to come to follow the game. So it's really more of a neutral setting. Providence will have more fans, but it's a neutral. The visiting team doesn't travel. But note that even though this is an annual series, they will always play on this court. They don't go home and away, because Brown figures, why not just play it over there? Gives all the fans a chance that want to come to the game to be there. They're giving Providence more home court advantage than they're supposed to. Maybe not enough to stick it in our pockets today, but the sort of situation that you should be looking for.
St. John's and Detroit meet up tonight in the Motor City, and this one's going to be a little bit fun. Certainly before tip-off should be a lot of fun, because there's going to be a pregame ceremony honoring the legendary Dick Vitale, and this will now become Dick Vitale Court at Callahan Hall. So Dickie V getting his name on the venue. Vitale actually had a 78-30 record at Detroit. He took him to the NCAA tournament back in 1977, and they beat the eventual champ Marquette on the road that year. Detroit's going to wear throwback uniforms tonight that are going to honor that season. They're going to be auctioned off afterwards for the V Foundation. Now, the question is whether this is going to give the Titans any more of a home court edge than they have already had, which is basically not very much. Detroit swept at home over the weekend, and they only drew crowds of 1,500 and 1,800 for their first two conference games on Thursday and Saturday. This is for an arena, the new Dick Vitale Court, that seats more than 8,000.
So let's go on the court in that game, show you some of the things that will be in play. Steve Lavin still not with St. John's, recovering well from cancer surgery, just isn't cleared to travel yet. Probably when the Big East schedule rolls around and the trips aren't that far. We'll see him back on the sidelines for road games. It'll be Mike Dunlop leading the team again. Detroit still waiting to get some of their better people on the court. We talked about Eli Holman a couple of weeks ago, the first time Detroit was on the board. He's still on what they're calling a leave of absence. Just no word as to when he's going to rejoin the team. The one situation they have clarified, Chris Blake, starting guard, will be back with the team on December 15th. They're now calling it a suspension. Earlier, he just wasn't there without any official reason. Also, since the last time we talked about Detroit, one thing they couldn't afford to lose, senior forward Nick Minerath, kind of a glue player while the other guys were out. He got hurt against Bowling Green 2 weeks ago. He's out for the season. Detroit, a very shorthanded team coming into tonight. Probably a big reason why they didn't draw a lot of fans those last two games.
Just when the Redskins were starting to get more hands on deck, well, here comes the news that they're going to be without Fred Davis and Trent Williams, two key cogs for a spotty offense, to put it mildly. Both guys are apparently going to be suspended, perhaps as early as this afternoon, for the remainder of the season for failed drug tests. Washington got both players out of the locker room yesterday early. Instead of speaking to the media, they were out the back door. Davis, he was having a Pro Bowl caliber season, no question about it. He was arguably Rex Grossman's most steady passing threat down the middle. And Williams, a first-round pick in last year's draft, was starting to come to his own. Two big, big losses for Washington as they stumble towards the finish line of another disappointing season.
Huge loss for Chicago yesterday, and one that will be a postmortem segment tomorrow because there's a little bit more to this story than meets the eye. But Matt Forte goes down with an MCL injury. Going to be out for at least a week. That is a huge blow for that offense. For as much as we talked about Jay Cutler in the season he was having, Forte had been the glue guy. 38% of the team's yards going into yesterday. Not just his rushing from scrimmage. He was going to go well over 1,000 yards if he hadn't been hurt. But going into yesterday's game, he had 52 catches. No one else in the Chicago team had more than 28. Now the problem, they're not well set up behind him. Marion Barber, way past peak. I can get you some tough yards inside, but he doesn't hit the edges the way Forte does. Khalil Bell, kind of the same way. Look at the impact yesterday. After Forte leaves, they don't score a single point in 2.5 quarters against Kansas City. And go from his 52 catches to the fact that neither Barber nor Bell caught a pass the rest of the game yesterday. Chicago's offense, very dire straits as they head to Denver this week to face that very improved Bronco defense.
Even though Von Miller didn't play yesterday, and it was a difference maker for Denver on the defensive side of the ball without him, certainly. Blah, enough with that. When we come back, you want a Monday night football game breakdown? You got it. It's money time.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
The media consultants say no. The feedback from you, the audience, says yes. I gotta go crazy. It's money time! Woo! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. Right now, the San Diego Chargers seem to be taking money hand over fist. Every bet the books are writing in early action so far today seems to be on the Chargers. Numbers -3 for San Diego, over under about 39 in that ball game. And Dave, this game, I don't know if it looked attractive before the season. Now, what is it, a matchup of two last place teams? Well, I guess the Jags aren't in last place, almost last place, because Indy, of course, is still winless.
There can't be any of you that wanted today's Money Time to be repeated. Not one. I dare you. I dare you to come in here. Okay, what's the issue with San Diego? Hearing now that Norv Turner likely to be fired at the end of the year. We hear the usual stories. Well, they're soft. You know, they don't take advantage of their opportunities. They're not mentally tough. Or is it just this year that this team has simply suffered too many injuries? Look at the offensive line. Marcus McNeil and Chris Dielman, a couple of guys who would ordinarily be Pro Bowl candidates. They've been gone for a while. They're not coming back. Brandon Dombrowski, who started at left tackle the last couple weeks, he's going to be out tonight. Was it just that this offensive line was so beat up? They're going to have Malcolm Floyd on the field tonight. Very rarely have they had Turner, Gates, and Floyd all available in the same game. The running back core has had injuries. Sean Phillips on defense has had to fight through injuries. Was it just a case of a team that couldn't get everybody healthy on the field? Now, there's a little light at the end of the tunnel, though, for them. Oakland lost yesterday. Chargers win tonight. They're only two games out in the division, and they do play the Raiders again. Is that enough to put a little bit of spark back into this team, or have the injuries just taken too much of a toll?
Well, we look at the track record for San Diego. They've been moneymakers for us in the month of December. Under Norv Turner, the Norv Turner that we love to hate, the Norv Turner that we've been able to make fun of for, what, about 20 years now, and yet he still finds a way to get a job. This will be his last one. Maybe he'll get a college job. I don't think we'll see Norv Turner as a head coach in the NFL following this year. But the bottom line, Norv Turner's Chargers teams in the month of December, 17-2 straight up, 12-6-1 against the spread. Consistent moneymakers, probably because they've underachieved so much over the first 3 months of the season that by December, everyone's like, I'm tired of losing money with San Diego. I'm going to bet this one the other way. We certainly have seen an element of that in some of the Chargers' late season success. Perhaps we'll see some of that here. But some big issues on the Jacksonville side too, huh, Dave?
Yeah, I think where you bring this into play, you look at that Turner record and then go look at Phillip Rivers in those December games under Turner. It's the idea that this guy is a good offensive coach. This guy's a good quarterback. You put them together, and as the season goes on, they develop the playbook. It just hasn't happened this year because there are only two positions in the entire offense outside of Rivers that haven't had a player go down for at least one game. So that didn't quite happen. But could it happen tonight? If the offensive line can give just enough protection, look at this Jacksonville secondary. Three starting cornerbacks, William Middleton, Rasheem Mathis, Derek Cox, all go on injured reserve in the last 2 weeks. That means you're patching together real quickly. You're putting guys out there who not only lack experience at their position, but they lack experience playing with the other guys in that unit. So that secondary looks real vulnerable if they can just get Phillip Rivers enough time to throw the ball down the field.
Well, that's an if. I mean, the one thing that the Jags also have on the injury front, you know, Matt Roth, Aaron Kampman, two defensive ends out of the equation for tonight's ballgame. Certainly, the Rashawn Mathis injury is one that stands out to me. The Kampman injury, another one that stands out to me. We know that the new Jaguars head coach, Mel Tucker, I'm not even sure if this is an audition for the job here. I don't think that Tucker, even if the Jags win their final four regular season games, their final five regular season games, I should say, maybe if they won all five. He might have a chance, but realistically, it doesn't look, at least from my perspective, that Tucker is going to be a realistic choice to get that job. But, you know, the Jacksonville job, out of 32 NFL jobs, that's the least attractive job. I don't think there's any question, both for the head coach and for the assistants. But the bottom line is, Tucker, he's a defensive guy. He's a defense coordinator. And the reports out of practice for Jacksonville, shorter practices, higher tempo. You got a coach with nothing on the line. Maybe take some risks here that Jack Del Rio would not have taken, both on the defensive side and on the offensive side. Don't be surprised to see the Jaguars going for it in a couple of situations where maybe they wouldn't have done that a week or two ago.
So I've given you a lot of questions for tonight's Monday night game, not a lot of answers. So if that's the case, let's move on to the hardwoods. Maybe we find something a little better there. Let's go to Chicago, where DePaul will be hosting Wisconsin-Milwaukee. DePaul right now a 2.5-point favorite. We got stung with the Blue Demons on Thursday. Had a chance to win it late. They didn't play well against Mississippi, but scrapped, competed, and had a chance to seal the game at the free throw line in the final minute. Didn't get it done. Something happened a lot with DePaul last year. They played much better under Oliver Purnell than the previous season, but you couldn't tell because the wins and losses didn't change. They were losing closer instead of getting blown out. Well, maybe they're not ready to seal the deal yet against the Minnesota or Mississippi. Two games they lost at point blank. Otherwise, they'd be undefeated this year. But tonight's a little different story. Wisconsin-Milwaukee comes to town, and they know they can beat this team. Last year, 71-57, hammered them on the boards, 35-21, force seven more turnovers than they committed. Maybe that Blue Demon confidence level is there, because four of the five DePaul starters tonight were starters in last year's win.
Yeah, and the Wisconsin-Milwaukee side of the equation here is kind of an interesting story as well. This is a team that, well, you know, they were pretty good last year. They won 19 games, 20 games the previous year. This, of course, is the school that turned Bruce Pearl into a coaching star a few years ago. And the program, I guess we'll call it a slow, steady decline since Pearl left. It's not like they're not in position to win 25, 30 games like they were with Pearl's pressing style. You know, now they're a team, you know, that good season, they're going to win 20, 18, 16. They're not in the top half of a conference that has been a disappointment, ATS, this year. And you talked about the fact that they were outclassed this matchup last year. Well, Wisconsin-Milwaukee, I don't know if they're any better this year. In fact, I think they may be a notch or two down. You know, they lost Anthony Hill and Tony Boyle from last year's squad. Jerob McCallum, his hurt, he missed both Thursday and Saturday conference wins for the Panthers. And again, Wisconsin-Milwaukee coming off not one but two conference games, Thursday, Saturday. Now they travel to Chicago for Monday. It's not a big travel spot, you know, not a tough commute from Milwaukee to the Windy City. But third game in five nights, coming off two hard-fought conference wins. And the market hasn't been right with Wisconsin-Milwaukee. They have one point spread cover so far this season, and they were 14.5 point chalk in their last ball game, 15.5 at the open. And guess what? Lucky to win it by a bucket in overtime. The Panthers have been a little bit overvalued in early season play.
So let's get our money back from Thursday night. It is play of the day time. Let's take DePaul, lay the 2.5. We think it's a very fair price for the matchups that we're dealing with. Wisconsin-Milwaukee off the overtime win Saturday, a little bit of physical fatigue, and not much preparation time to go up against those DePaul presses that are going to come after you for the full 40 minutes. We don't think it'll be close enough for those DePaul nerves in the latter stages to come into play. Look for DePaul to win comfortably tonight as our play of the day.
And that's going to wrap it up for the Monday edition. Thank you so much, really, for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck.